Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
What's up, Fungal Associates? Welcome to Completely Arbitrary, the podcast about trees and other related topics. I am one of your hosts. My name is Alex Croson, and I am sitting across from, as always, renowned dendrologist, heck of a man, Casey Clapp.
Wow, Alex, that's really sweet of you to say. Thank you.
You're most welcome, Casey.
I have bad news for you.
Uh-oh.
Right before we started, you said, "Casey, are you ready?" And I typed some things, and I pressed enter, and I said, "I'm ready."
Yeah.
I'm not ready.
Okay. Well, I'll fill some time. This is like when on Wayne's World, when Garth is on there by himself.
Yeah,
and he has a meltdown. He doesn't know what to do.
Doesn't know what to say.
Yeah,
yeah. Well, this is I am ready. There's no problem. I'll do this afterwards.
Okay.
I'm getting a PDF of something called the Measuring Guidelines Handbook, of which you'll become very familiar in moments.
Is this the new Sibley guide? Is this like going to replace the Sibley guide in our canon?
Yeah, everyone. With this one, though, they're going to pay us to push, unlike Sibley. Ungrateful bastard.
As far as I've gone with David Allen Sibley is to DM his Instagram account and ask if he would like to be on our show. It probably went unseen, like many of our DMs go.
Yeah, it's true. We're working very hard, though, just to be very clear.
Casey, we have a tree to talk about today.
Yeah, we sure do.
It is one that I have heard of before, but don't have much familiarity with.
Okay.
It's been requested much.
Yes, it has.
And upon doing my bit of research for Croson's Homegrown Trivia, which will come later, I have learned to already like this tree.
Wow.
It is known by many names.
I was going to say, choose anyone. I can see you're trying to say, which one do I want right
there
now?
There was a wheel spinning in my head as
gonna,
I was.
You're going to set a precedent right now, Alex.
This is the tulip tree.
Well done.
One word.
One word, tulip tree. Two words, tulip poplar.
Yes.
Two words also, tulip yellow poplar.
Yes.
That's three, but really,
I've seen yellow poplar.
Yeah, yellow poplar. But you know what I learned about this is that name, so liliodendron literally means the lily tree.
Right.
That was provided by none other than Carl Linnaeus. And the OG writer of our commonly accepted taxonomy in a scientific way.
Right.
He called it that because obviously we call it the tulip tree. They thought the flowers back then looked more like lilies. Kind of is, you know, who cares? Neither here nor there.
Sure.
But that is kind of what people call it. They say that because they think it looks really pretty and nice as a tree, but in the trade for like lumber, it's more common to say yellow poplar because they don't like to add in the lumber trade often like specificity to things. Like yellow pine is like several different species of pine tree. In fact, sometimes then you just say fir and it's like a bunch of different true firs and Douglas fir, and they kind of homogenize things for the trade.
Is it because in wood terms, those trees that you might call fir trees all behave the same way?
Exactly. They have a lot of like wood properties that are similar.
Okay. Yeah. Well, Casey, I have plenty to say about the wood.
Ooh, I want to hear this, Alex.
But first, let's imagine, as we do every episode, that you and I are walking through an Appalachian forest.
Appalachian forest. Yeah.
Appalachian.
Yes, the way the French originally named it.
And we come across some tulip poplars. Some tulip trees, excuse me. Oh, this is going to be a mess. I can just tell.
Hey, it's all right. You can choose any name. This is your own Alex taxonomy, remember.
Let's settle on one to quell confusion.
Tulip tree.
Tulip tree.
That's what I think.
We come across some tulip trees. Casey, let's ID this tree.
Tulip tree. It is a gorgeous tree. So I'm going to start with the bark on this because these trees get huge. And so the first thing you're probably going to see is a bark of this tree. And this bark looks actually quite similar to the Tree of Heaven bark, in my opinion, except it gets a little bit more furrowed a little bit quicker.
Is this sort of the diamond pattern?
Yeah, exactly. It's got that kind of diamond pattern, but instead of staying like kind of flat, the diamond pattern of the tulip poplar gets way bigger and thicker with huge ridges on it.
Cool.
And again, it looks like there's a bunch of like crossing X's that kind of come up in that diamond pattern.
Yeah.
But it's a really light gray, very uniform going all the way up the tree. And you can see it like moving and getting bigger and thicker as you go down, but it still maintains that easy pattern the whole way up.
You had used a great describer to describe this this diamond pattern as like on the back of a truck.
Yes,
like a toolbox
the
on the back of a
plating.
Truck, the diamond plating pattern.
That is what I see.
I think that's pretty great.
I would say maybe it actually might be almost a little bit inverse, like what's the embossed versus the opposite of that?
Exuded or
something?
Yeah,
let's say exuded.
It's not that. Instead of the diamond shapes being coming out, they're inset.
Yes.
So the parts coming out are the lines between the diamond shapes.
That's exactly it. Yeah.
Wow. I hope that was, there were more pros to that description than cons.
Yeah, I think so. Honestly, let's just assume that there is.
Okay.
So you see this bark, you look up the tree and you see some leaves coming down from some very unlikely, but possibly low hanging branches.
Here we go. Leaves.
Oh my God. I call these, and this is how someone in one of my ID courses years ago, not that I was also taking, they described it as the Felix the Cat.
Yeah.
And I call it a cat face tree. And this is how we remembered what it looked like.
Yeah.
So if you have this, I'll describe the leaf. It's alternately arranged along the stem. It is a simple leaf, and it is in one of the rare boats that it actually has a truncated top. A truncated top of a leaf or tip is like flat. This one, not only is it flat, it's actually a little inverted.
Right.
So usually you'd expect that main vein going through the middle.
Yeah.
That would be the longest point, right? From the bottom of the petiole out that main vein. You usually think there's going to be some tip, you know, the tip of the oak leaf, the tip of the maple leaf.
Mm-hmm.
In this case, there's actually veins that come off left and right at essentially 45 or a little bit less degree angles. And then they grow up like two little cat ears.
Yeah.
Higher than that middle point. So they would have that term for it.
It's a really unique look. I've never seen a leaf look like this. It almost looks like an oak leaf, like a red oak.
Yeah.
But if you snip the middle tip.
Yeah, you just
the
cut
middle
that off.
Lobe.
It's exactly right.
And so it's got this little cat ear shape to it.
And then Felix the Cat of the cartoon fame had like those jowls that came out.
Little tufts of hair on his cheeks.
And that is what this has. And so if you just draw a little smiley face and some little whiskers coming out, two little eyes, it looks exactly like a Felix the Cat face.
Just wonderful. I'd like to give my first Croson stump of approval
to
this leaf.
All right. That's a good one. I'm gonna give you a good Fagoosh.
Thank you.
I had to remember exactly what
wow.
my sound was. I knew I was going to make a sound, but my, you know, like if you think too quickly about something, then it doesn't come naturally.
If you think too quickly, it
doesn't
come naturally.
Or like, not too quickly, you don't think quickly enough. You just, or you think about it, you know?
You overthink it.
Yeah, you overthink it. I was overthinking it, and I was like, Fagunch? Oh, shoot, what am I supposed to say? I forgot.
Fagush.
Fiduciary.
Yes, these leaves are one of a kind and
they
so
really
cool.
Are
yeah. there any other trees that have this sort of inversed tip?
You know, there are. I can't.
Or what we'll call an innie.
Yeah, I think there are a lot of innies out there. There certainly are some that I don't know about. The tropics, again, have just about everything all over the place.
Sure.
But there's a species of tree that they believe this actually came from, which is some kind of curious taxonomy in the fossil world, that they call the Archaeanthus that they found, and there's a article we'll link to from 2013. It shows the leaves of these, which actually look kind of like a horseshoe, where the middle like almost stops, and then the veins on the left and right just keep going up.
Wow!
Like, it looks like a samara, double samara from a maple tree, or you know something like that. A big mustache, you know, with a petiole at the other side.
Oh, like a handlebar.
Yeah. Exactly. So cool. There at least used to be way more plants that looked just like that. But for the most part, it's kind of rare, especially in North America. You don't see very many plants that have that truncated top like that, that innie.
Right. Interesting. Well, Casey, let's talk about the namesake of the tulip tree.
As we should.
The fleur.
Oh, Alex.
Not a tulip, I guess.
Not a tulip. In the technical sense, it is, in fact, neither a tulip nor a poplar. Probably not a tree, but we're gonna say it's a tree. I'm just kidding. It's a tree.
Wow.
Yeah, sorry.
I really thought you were throwing a curveball.
No, it is. It is. In fact, as we will discuss, it is a very, it fits the definition in spades.
I'm excited to hear why.
Well, Alex, this flower.
It has a trunk.
It has a
and
trunk.
And leaves and... Is
and,
tall.
And is tall. Any other questions, Alex? Okay, so this flower. Have you Googled it?
Yes.
Okay, everyone else
Casey,
out there.
Casey, hold
have
on.
You Googled it?
Usually I have to Google things.
Uh-huh.
I know the tulip tree's tulip.
You pre-Googled.
No, what? I've seen it in real life, motherfucker. Yeah.
Oh, my God.
I go outside.
Oh, hold
I
on.
I look at things.
Hold on, Alex.
Wait, the only alternative to me having Googled this was... Googling it before? Really?
Well,
you didn't
you know.
Just maybe try to assume that I'd seen one in real life.
It's mostly that many times we talk about a tree and I'm like, have you seen this? And you're like, no, I've never seen it. So I jumped the gun there. I admit. The podcast regrets the error, Alex.
You should apologize.
I'm sorry. I did.
No, Casey, there are several tulip trees on the street adjacent to my building.
Yes, there is.
And wow, these flowers are also unique, I feel.
Yeah, they really are.
They also seem sort of old. They look archaic to
yeah,
me.
Yeah, honestly, that's a really good descriptor of it.
Yeah, well, let's talk about the anatomy of this flower.
Okay, so this flower is... So there's a little bit of taxonomic, like who done it, who what's it. They believe that this is initially a very old flower that developed from the magnolias.
Right.
So it's in the magnolia family. But
magnolia?
That, yeah. Magnoliaceae.
Yeah.
You're right, but the science, you got the genus correct.
Yeah. I was stopping at the two-thirds away through the word to let you finish it.
Thank you so much. Honestly, that's called partnership, Alex.
Thank you.
That's what that is.
Yep.
So this, it has this this central main kind of pyramidal growth in the middle.
Yeah.
And that release, or that is what is the pistil. So that's where all of the... pollen would actually grow or go into and pollinate the middle of that kind of little top. On the outside, just outside of that, is all the stamen that release all the pollen. Then outside of that is the all the petals. And the petals usually have like a creamy white top or tip of them.
Yeah.
And the base, they kind of fade to this like fiery, you know, reddish orange looking flame effect. And it looks really, really similar to a modern day tulip with those, the bases of the tulip petals having those almost, they look like fire. They actually do look like flames kind of shooting up.
Yeah.
And then they transition to a different color at the top.
Is that like a form of variegation?
Yeah, I think it would be. Yeah, okay. In a technical sense. Yeah. Or just, you know, a coloration. A lot of times flowers do that, and to the insects that they're looking to get in, it actually almost looks like a landing pad. Like it calls them in and points to right where the goods are.
I want to say about this flower, I think it also looks much like the leaf. It looks very unique to me.
Yeah.
This middle section, this cone in the middle, and then these stamen.
Yes.
Surrounding it.
Uh-huh.
And then the petals on the outside, and kind of it's I've been rewatching a replay of the classic 1994 point and click adventure Riven. Are you familiar with this game?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Do you remember Myst?
Yes, I do remember
it's
Myst.
It's the sequel to Myst.
Oh, so I see.
You're more familiar with it than you think.
Turns out I am. My sister really liked playing that. I could never get on board because I just couldn't figure it out. I didn't have the patience to sit there and riddle my way through it.
Oh, yeah. I was like 7 years old when I attempted to play it. And I have a very heartbreaking story about Riven, but it's for another time.
Oh, okay.
But to me, this flower looks like a puzzle of some kind. Like you would come across it, and it's like this strange sort of like ethereal quality to it. Like, ooh, who made this? Who put this here?
Yeah, why?
Yeah, like I look at it and it's just very curious looking.
That is really interesting. That's a very interesting perspective.
It doesn't look like many other flowers I've seen.
It truly doesn't. And honestly, that I think is really what sets this apart. And I think as we talked actually earlier this week, we chatted about the fact that magnolias are like the oldest kind of plant. So if you're essentially a flowering thing, you're in this big, I think if you're an angiosperm, they have named the entire, what is it? It's clade. It's not the family. So it'd be maybe order. What is it? Kingdom phylum. Maybe it's the phylum.
Yeah.
It is named after magnolia because magnolia is accepted as one of the most primitive style of flowers. Like it basically is the OG thing, and every other kind of flower basically is allegedly some kind of variation on that through time.
Right.
And so this, 100 million years ago, tulip trees existed. Their lineages were fully formed. And because there's two species, I should say, that are still extant today, one in China, one in Eastern North America.
Mm.
So this tree is an old style. So you're exactly right. Like it kind of looks ancient and old because it is very likely ancient and old and hasn't really modified itself significantly over the last several million years.
My favorite part of that, Casey, of the ancientness of the magnolia group, you know, including the tulip tree.
Yeah.
But magnolias, I know this about southern magnolias specifically, that they are pollinated by beetles.
Yes, and I don't know if these are. I would bet that they are, in fact.
That'd be interesting to find out.
It would be interesting. So I'll do some Googling on it, but I didn't focus on that today because, A, this flower is just enough in and of itself to look at. But two other things that are fun about this this little flower. So that middle cone, that is essentially a bunch of different carpels like we talked about last week. So that would be what is considered a multiple fruit, where there's a bunch of different individual, actually, no, I'm sorry. This is an aggregate where it's one flower with a bunch of carpels in the middle. And then as the whole thing gets pollinated, the flower petals kind of close up, kind of go and degrade and look like they just kind of go get old and die, and then they fall away. And then this cone, this entire time, has been growing for maybe an inch or half an inch tall.
Cone shape.
You're right. Thank you. This cone shaped thing, which is, you know, in the middle.
Yes.
That is the ovary, and that's the receptacle where the flower is kind of attached to. And then whoop, it gets bigger and taller and then splits off into a bunch of individual little samaras. And all those little things will just fall apart piece by piece, and those are all the seeds.
Is this the brown husky thing?
Yes.
Okay, this
thing. With all those long, like straw things coming out of
yes.
it?
Yes. Yeah. This same thing happens with magnolias.
Yes, except the magnolias get bigger and that whole thing doesn't end up falling apart. The magnolia gets bigger and then opens up and the seeds pop out. So it's all stays together, which is why the magnolia is this aggregate fruit as well.
Right.
But it's all fused together and it doesn't split apart. It just splits open.
Okay.
So yeah, you're exactly right. That's fantastic, Alex.
Casey, how about some Croson's homegrown trivia?
Hey, that's what I'm in the mood for right now.
All right. Well, I have a thesis statement that I'll get to at the end of this whole thing.
Ooh.
But I'm gonna give you some ideas first of some different facts about this tree.
All right. Hit me with it.
All right. So Let's start with the wood. The wood is extremely prolific.
That's a good way to put it.
Yeah. But it's never, I wouldn't say from my research that it's chosen for its good looks. It's chosen for its workability.
Yeah, that's true. We should add, it grows really fast.
Yes.
It's a very fast growing tree.
Yes, it grows very fast.
Yep.
And it is a, it grows very straight and tall.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So you can get a lot of lumber out of one tree. And it is a, what is this? Hmm. Early succession tree?
Yeah, that's exactly right.
So
well
in done. In a place that's, what is like cut or burned?
Yeah, some disturbance has left it able to be colonized by new plants.
Yes, and the tulip poplar will be among the first yes, to take off.
That's exactly right.
It's got the gumption.
Yeah.
So I would call this utility wood.
Ah, yes. Okay.
We talked about mm-hmm. utility bark that's just sort of there.
Yep. Just does a purpose.
I'm going to call this utility wood because okay. here's a short list of the things that you can make with this wood.
Okay.
And see if you can find a theme.
Hmm.
Pallets.
Ooh, okay.
Crates.
Okay.
Furniture frames.
Uh-huh.
Paper. It's a good paper tree.
Okay, makes sense.
Plywood.
Okay.
Houses.
Whole houses.
Yeah. Baskets.
Okay.
Flooring and fencing.
Ooh, so everything here seems a utility, which yes. I believe was your first, you know, note.
That's right.
But also a lot of it seems like it's the we don't care what it looks like.
Precisely, you know?
It's
Casey.
All like either hidden or painted or underneath something.
Purely utilitarian.
Yeah.
You don't need right. a shipping crate does not need to look beautiful.
Yeah, you just need it to do its job.
It just needs to be a shipping crate.
Gotcha.
Historically, and I'm sure today also, the Cherokee tribe of North America and modern like bushcraft communities
uh-huh.
really revere this tree. This is a utility medicine tree.
Oh wait, is this are you coming up on this thesis statement?
We're getting there.
Okay.
So as far as medicine, the tulip tree was used for parasitic worms, mm-hmm. diarrhea, cough, rheumatism, gastrointestinal distress. Hey, give me some of this stuff.
Yeah, right? Just go eat it.
Fever, snake bite.
Wow, that's everything.
Poultices, fractured limbs, boils, dermatological issues. This is a one-stop shop. Anything that ails you.
Wow.
I had no idea. If you go to the doctor and they don't really know what's wrong with you, but you obviously have symptoms, they'd be
yeah.
like, tulip tree.
Yeah. What it used to be, they would just give you a little cigarettes and cocaine.
It, right.
Actually, so that's the same for the tulip tree. Well, it looks like your nerves are a little shaky. Here, take some American spirits.
Yeah.
Calm yourself down.
An ounce of opium.
Yeah, just to get yourself straight.
Yeah, so tulip tree. Utility medicine, utility wood.
Wow, okay. All right, this makes sense.
My favorite bit about this, because it grows so fast,
mm-hmm.
it's so light
mm-hmm.
and flexible.
Yep.
I read the word elastic.
Ah, okay.
Easily worked.
Yep.
Perfect tree for dugout canoes.
Yes, I read that also, which I thought was, apparently they called it, like when first settlers came by and they saw mm-hmm. the Cherokee probably specifically, they made so many dugout canoes with this tree alone, they called it the canoe wood tree.
Wow.
Or just canoe wood.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah, so if you're in a pinch and need a quick canoe, chop down a tulip tree.
Yeah, dig it out.
Dig it out, put it on the water, you're good to go.
Have I ever told you I really want to do that? I would love to take a class or learn about how to make that.
Wow.
Over here, the same tree, or the same canoe would be made out of Western red cedar.
I thought it might, Casey.
Yeah. Well, some people also would use birch, but they use birch bark to make canoes
okay.
also. But that would be so interesting to A, see the difference, and then B, to actually use one and,
yeah.
and make that happen. That'd be so exciting.
Yeah. And the grain is also really fine.
Yeah.
So it makes for good water sport.
Okay. So this is, I think, you're, all right. I'm well, actually, you haven't explicitly said it.
Well, there's one word that kind of sums up the uses of the tulip tree, and that is... Utility
tree.
Utility tree.
It's a utility tree.
Yeah. Oh my God, it's a utility tree.
I was going to say, ironically, we don't use it for utility poles.
Wow, that is the ultimate irony,
Casey. Yeah, exactly. Honestly, good for it. I bet you the tulip poplar's like, yeah, thank you.
Yeah, don't label me.
Yeah, I'm not going to be a part of your system.
We don't want to pigeonhole the utility tree by making utility poles. That's a little too on the nose.
It's a little, it does. Ironically, I think it narrows it too much.
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Well done.
Casey, we got lots more to say about the tulip tree, but it must happen after a short break. We'll be right back with more Completely Arbitrary.
Hi, everybody. Or should I say, hola a todos. I want you to hear something. It's this. Yes, that is the sound of learning a new language with Babbel. You have, of course, heard of Babbel. You maybe even used Babbel. But if you haven't, Babbel is an app that helps you learn languages. Babbel is a science-backed learning language app that actually works. Let me put it this way. I knew somebody who used a different language app for 365 days and still could not even have basic conversations in the language they were learning on that app. Babbel is not this. They have quick 10-minute lessons and they're handcrafted by 200 language experts so you can start learning a new language in as little as 3 weeks. Because it's designed by real people for real conversations. In fact, a recent study found that using Babbel for 15 hours is equivalent to a full semester at college. And of course, the best way to learn a new language is immersion. You go and live in the place where the people speak the language you're learning. You speak to the people, they speak back. But the second best way is Babbel. And it's practical. It will very quickly teach you how to order food, ask for directions, speak to shopkeepers without having to consult language apps while you're on vacation. And here is a special limited time deal for our listeners right now. Get up to 60% off your Babbel subscription, but only for Fungal Associates at babbel.com/trees. That's right. If you're listening to this, if you're a fan of this show, babbel.com/trees. Get 60% off your subscription. That's babbel.com/trees. Rules and restrictions may apply. Adios. This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. Hi, everybody. It's Alex here. And you know what? Come springtime, those trees are a-bloomin'. Those people are a-walkin' around. That sun is a-shinin'. And it makes me so grateful for my social life. People are wanting to do things again, and it can be extremely rewarding to start to see friends more often and, you know, go on cute friend dates or romantical dates, sit on a patio and drink a coffee. Ooh la la. But it's really easy to overdo it. And for me, it's very important to keep an eye on my social battery. Every time I go on a social outing, I come home and I'm like, wow, I am really tired in a very specific way. Well, that's my battery. That's my social battery being drained. And I didn't really have this language until I started going to therapy. I didn't know why being around people made me so exhausted, even though I love those people and enjoy being around them. But therapy helped me with my self-awareness and helped me unlock some language that I didn't otherwise have. And if you are struggling with feelings and thoughts that you don't understand, therapy can be a great way to unlock the power of understanding. And a great way to start is BetterHelp. It's completely online and it's designed to be super convenient and flexible, which is very important. How many times have you had a therapy session on the calendar and that time rolls around and you think, I gotta drive all the way across town. I am not gonna go. It has, of course, happened to me. I'm sure it's happened to everybody who's been in therapy. No worries with BetterHelp. It's all online. And all you have to do is fill out a brief questionnaire. You get matched with a licensed therapist, of course. And nobody nails it on their first time. It's like going on dates. You gotta find the right therapist for you. It's silly to think that the very first date you ever go on is going to be your future spouse. So you can switch therapists at any time, no additional charge. It's extremely easy. So find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/trees today to get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/trees. Happy spring. Welcome back to Completely Arbitrary. Today we're talking the tulip tree, aka the yellow poplar, aka the yellow tulip poplar, aka the tulip poplar,
aka the tulip tree,
aka the cat face tree.
There's a lot of names for this, Alex.
Send your other AKAs to arbitrarypod@gmail.com for what you call this tree.
It might be featured on our next Instagram post.
Casey.
Alex.
Yes?
Oh, no. I was responding to you.
Oh, I was setting you up to talk about this tree.
All right. Let me give you some numbers here. Let me just give you some numbers.
Numbers. Yep. No context?
No context.
All right. Let's hear it.
362 inches.
Okay.
139 feet.
Mm-hmm.
78 feet.
Okay.
521 points.
Okay.
What do those mean?
Let's see. Can I carry that? Add that. I'm going to say 11 meters is the answer.
All right. You are 100% incorrect.
Wouldn't that be amazing if I wasn't?
Yeah, I would. I'd be like, oh my God, how did you do that? Yeah, that would have been
like
pretty stunning.
Like a mentat.
All right, so here's what those all mean. The trunk circumference of one tulip poplar, tulip tree, is 362 inches. Around is what that is.
All right, I'm going to do some quick math, and by that I mean pull up a calculator. Sounds 326 inches?
Yep, 326. I'm sorry, no, 362.
Okay, it's about 30 feet.
30 feet. Now, that's 30 feet around. On that same thing.
What the hell? 30 feet?
Yeah, around.
Oh, my God.
Now, I want to hold on. It actually, that makes it feel way bigger. You're familiar with pi r squared and all that.
Uh-huh.
Diameter, essentially. So, if you were to take that circumference and go into a calculator again, that's like circumference to diameter, let's see what that is.
Okay, so I've put in 30 feet circumference,
mm-hmm,
with it, and it gives us a diameter of 114 inches.
Why would they do that? That's very frustrating, changing the units on us.
9.5 feet.
Very, very unscientific. 9.5 feet, Alex.
Yes.
That is pretty impressive. That's a diameter. And to me, diameter is way more impressive as like a number. Even though it's not quite as big, it actually gives me something to like conceptualize.
It's way easier to visualize.
Yeah. And then because of this, it's like 3r pi or 3 pi r or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what am I saying? Pi is 3.14. So if you are trying to calculate the diameter from the radius, the radius is usually three times-ish the circumference. The circumference is usually 3.14 times the size of the diameter.
I'll be honest, I'm losing interest really fast.
I know, it's okay. It's draining
like a tub.
This is the best part about our show, is bring you down to the brink and then pull you back up, Alex.
It's like a real hero's journey.
Yeah, it really is. So what I'm describing to you right now is the way that we calculate, we being this group called American Forests, calculate the champion trees of the United States.
Champion tree.
Yeah, champion tree. Hold on. Oh, is that a plug in that drain I just saw? Yeah. Looks like things are filling up again, Alex.
Ooh, Alex likes the word champion. What is a champion tree?
Oh, a champion tree is the biggest, is the only way you can do it. Like, that's the best way to say it, but it's really not even that accurate.
Okay.
It's the biggest tree of its species in the United States, specifically the political territory boundary lines of the United States.
Okay. Yeah, so a champion tree is just the largest specimen of a species of tree.
Yes.
On record within the United States.
Correct. But as I was kind of saying, there's a little bit of a misnomer there. So you remember that very last word that I said, 521 points?
Yes, what is points?
So that is how this whole thing is calculated. So you take X, which is the tree trunk circumference in inches. You multiply that by Y, the tree height in feet. And you multiply that by Z divided by 4, which is the tree's average crown spread divided by 4.
Now, this is the definition of completely arbitrary.
Yes, it is. Oh my God, Alex, I'm so glad you brought that up.
Holy shit.
That equals the total points, of which
the points.
The tulip tree, Liriodendron tulipifera, one that is in, I think it's in Virginia somewhere.
Okay.
This tree is the champion tulip tree at 521 points.
Wow.
Yeah. Not the biggest. There are more taller trees. There are more wider trees. I should rephrase. Someone's going to be upset that I just did it. There are taller trees.
There are wider trees.
And there are trees with probably a bigger spread on average. However, when you do all that point stuff, adding it up, it's those things all weighted in a certain way to make it the champion tree. So it's like the biggest and the tallest and the widest in terms of crown spread.
This tree satisfies the algorithm.
Exactly. It is exactly an algorithm, I think, by literal definition.
Yeah.
And so when we first wanted to talk about this tree, I was really excited because I'm like, oh, this tree's great. It's like, it's the biggest tree of the broadleaf trees in North America.
Wow.
And you were like, wait a second. What about the beech tree? Because I think I asked you, which one do you think is the biggest? And you said, eh, probably a beech.
Yeah. In my experience, beeches are fucking massive.
They are. They're really massive trees. But their crown spread is way bigger than probably what most tulip poplars would be or tulip trees would be. But the tulip tree would grow way, way taller.
Okay.
I think the tallest one is like 190 feet tall. It is the tallest broadleaf tree in Western or in anywhere in North America.
It's hard to even comprehend.
It's really huge. Imagine all of our conifers that grow out here. Think of like the biggest one, and the tulip tree could be like hanging out with it.
That's incredible.
Yeah. Some of our really, really big ones, a lot of our Douglas firs can get well over 240, 250 feet tall. But if you go to a reasonable old, reasonably large size forest, it will be nothing but gigantic conifers. And then if you had the biggest tulip poplar, which grows in the Appalachian Mountains in the Great Smokies, it would be brushing shoulders with these giants.
Wow.
Still maybe 40 or 50 feet short, but it would be taller than the biggest big leaf maple, to my understanding. It'd probably be taller than all the alders, any of our Oregon white oaks, things like that.
Yeah, so trees with needle-like leaves.
Yes.
What's the word I'm looking for?
Conifers.
Conifers.
Yeah, we'll just go conifers. Sure.
Their strategy for growth is a spear headed into the sun.
Correct, yeah.
And broadleaf trees generally are more, they more outstretch their arms.
Yeah.
Instead of grow straight up. But it sounds like the tulip tree sort of has both of these worlds happening within its genes.
Yeah, it kind of does, but it actually took the first form that you're talking about. And what that is two different terms of the way trees grow. One is called X-current growth, and then the other is called D-current growth.
Okay.
So an X-current growth grows straight up. It has that central main leader with branches that come off of it, whereas a D-current growth grows out like this,
sure,
where you have everything kind of growing up and out at the same time.
So a tulip poplar is X-current?
It has more of an X-current form, which matches that of all the conifers, which have that nice, strong central leader, whereas the other ones, it's the classic kids draw trees. You have a triangle on a stick, and you have a circle on a stick.
Right.
That would be X-current versus D-current, respectively.
Interesting. Okay.
So that's why it can get so tall. It's just like it's competing, and it's just growing straight up. They usually have that nice big central trunk. They grow fast. They grow straight. They're good lumber trees, like you said. And so that got me thinking. I was like, wow, okay, cool. And I think the only other trees that get like up to this height easily are like the eucalyptus trees. Mm. A couple other trees, maybe from some old European forests. You're certainly going to find one or two down in the tropics that get, you know, really huge and high really fast. But for a temperate tree, the tulip tree is like, pun intended, head and shoulders above the rest.
Okay.
They just grow massively. So then I started looking around and I was like, okay, cool. What are the big trees around here? Because, you know, you look up big tree and then you obviously come all the time to this group called American Forests.
Can we pause real fast?
Yeah.
What was the pun that you were intending?
Oh, the pun? That was head and shoulders above the rest uh-huh. because they grow so tall. Is that... That's not really a pun, is it? They grow head and shoulders above the rest.
Trees don't have heads and shoulders.
They don't that really, would be, do they?
I don't mean Ooh. To call you out, but I did bump up against that, and I haven't been able to hear anything you've said since.
It's an anti-pun. That wasn't a pun. It just, they grow head and shoulders above it. It was a metaphor.
Oh, okay. It's yeah. like an anti-hero
yeah.
of puns.
Sorry. I didn't realize that threw you off so hard.
It's a Walter White of puns.
Yeah, okay, yeah. That's exactly what I just did.
Anytime someone says pun intended, I pay very close attention.
Yeah, okay, that's
I want to hear this pun.
Yeah, I want to see how good it was, pun yeah. intended. I guess head and shoulders. Yeah, I don't know why. Yeah, I thought that maybe I was making some thing about them being taller than everything else.
Sure.
Which I was, but it's not a pun.
It's not a pun, Case. Where did we leave off?
We were leaving off at American Forests.
American Forests.
Yes. Now, have you heard of this organization before?
No.
Well, Alex, American Forests is an advocacy and kind of a research group that's been around for a really long time. And they initially are trying to, way back when, basically make advocacy for forests and for trees back when no one really cared that much about it. They've been okay. around for, I think, a couple hundred years. Just a hundred years, maybe.
So, like an OG conservation group.
Yeah, exactly. But they also are, they're a conservation group, but like they're kind of based out of everywhere. And so it's they've evolved more recently to kind of focus what they're talking about. Like I remember being like, oh yeah, American Forest. We've looked them up before just for, you know, looking for, hey, who should we reach out to about what we're doing? Something yeah. like that. And I was like, well, honestly, we shouldn't really go for them because they don't really. And then I paused and I was like, I don't even really know what they do.
Can I read their mission statement?
Yeah, please do.
American Forests creates healthy and resilient forests from cities to large natural landscapes that deliver essential benefits for climate, people, water, and wildlife. We advance our mission through forestry innovation, place-based partnerships to plant and restore forests, and movement building.
There you go. That's a lot. It's a lot of stuff.
That's a big mission.
Yeah. But historically, the only thing that I really knew them for is like the thing that they did, aside from all the rest of this, is like, you know, an advocacy kind of group in yeah. a way, was they manage and maintain the Register of Big Trees.
Wow.
You ever heard of that?
No, a second thing I've never heard of.
Well, Alex. So this is kind of essentially where I started like shooting off into as we were doing some research on this. There is what we call a Register of Big Trees.
I have found the Register, Casey.
Oh my God.
It is a 6-page Excel spreadsheet.
Oh wow, you found that?
With maybe 6-point font.
Wow.
There are a lot of trees here.
There's a lot. And you can, I am up on the American Forest website and I'm looking at their kind of list search area.
Yeah.
So you can filter it by genus, scientific name, common name, the state, or by the order. You can do like, what's the height? What's the highest? What's the crown spread? Trunk circumference, points, and that kind of thing.
This is very interesting.
It's a lot of fun.
Yeah.
And
it's like a game.
But man, so I was looking into this, and a lot of people are always like, well, we got the champion tree. And like, it's a big, big point of pride.
Uh-huh.
Each state has one. The state of Oregon has one that's run by a group of arborists, actually local in town here, that collectively have a nonprofit called Ascending the Giants.
Hmm.
And they are specifically trying to find all of the champion trees in Oregon of all the species that you can essentially count. And so then you're like, okay, well, cool. How do you measure these trees? How do you find them? They're just like crazy people. They're like, hey, let's just go out into the woods of this old growth area, talk to these old timers who are like, oh yeah, there's a big old tree up there and there's a spike. Go look at that.
They're like Sasquatch hunters.
They're like Sasquatch hunters, yeah. And quite literally, they're looking for the biggest footprint of a tree.
Yes.
Wow.
Wow, Casey.
And I know actually several of these guys. Yeah, they're very ironic.
Pun intended, I mean.
Good for me. We're going to get here somewhere. So they are, they're just really, they're very cool guys. They're arborists and it's, you can do so much to try to figure this out. So I ended up clicking through and I said, well, where do you find the guidelines? Like, what do they do and how can I maybe get involved? They have all this stuff on the AmericanForest.com, but I ended up just going through it a little bit because I realized a lot of people have no idea how to measure a tree.
Yeah.
You know how I constantly I guess not with you, but in anyone else, I would talk about regulations based on size of tree. That
I'm sure we've talked about this.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure we have, but maybe
I mean, you and I personally.
Yes, probably.
Off pod.
Well, it turns out that a lot of people are like, wait, you mean like height? I'm like, oh, no. If it's 20 inches in diameter, and then I realize, oh, a lot of people don't know. How do you measure diameter?
Yeah.
Well, there's diameter tapes that go around it, but then the question is, well, where around a tree? Do you do it at the base of a tree? Do you do it at a certain height up the tree? Is it, you know, what if there's a flare on the tree? What if there's two stems that come out from the base? Where do you measure it then?
Interesting.
What if there's 30 stems that come out from the base?
Then it's a shrub.
Exactly. Then it's a shrub, even though it's, you know, 600 feet tall.
Yeah.
Well, it turns out that this has all been codified years ago. In fact, a lot of this comes from the traditional forestry where they had to say, well, how are we going to know how big a tree is? Because that's how we would pay someone to say, you know, you're going to make this much or you have this much board feet. How do we measure that? Because we pay you per board foot of, you know, timber on this stump, you know, all this kind of weird jargony stuff.
So was there like a Linnaeus of tree measuring?
There probably was. I don't know who it was though.
All right.
But most likely, but they essentially said at 4.5 feet, the term used to be breast height, where, you know, a forester would go over and they say, well, breast height, and you just measure it, you know, at your chest.
Okay.
But then people are like, well, I'm 6'4". This guy's 6 or 5'4". The breast height is now 1 foot higher or lower per whoever's measuring it. So they decided to essentially standardize that at 4.5 feet above average grade.
Interesting.
So then the next question is, well, where's average grade? Out here, most of our trees that are the big, big ones are growing on steep slopes, really steep. Sometimes not that steep. Sometimes like you can't even walk without having yourself be tied in or something.
Oh my God.
And they would go down and they say, well, we have to figure out where to measure it. Where is the slope? Do we measure it from the top of the slope? At which point, if you go up, the 4.5 feet from the top of the slope is going to be a smaller diameter than if you go down 4.5 feet or measure it from the bottom side of the slope as the tree gets wider at the base, right?
Right.
So if you measure it at the bottom, they assume that there's kind of a natural, normal trajectory of how much loss there is in diameter as the tree goes up.
Sure, it's so not going to suddenly get really, really, really skinny.
Yeah, even though a lot of trees actually do. Giant sequoia is a great example where at 4.5 feet, they can be like 6 feet in diameter, but then they quickly taper down to like 2 feet. Then they grow straight up at 2 feet for like, you know, a couple, 20 or 30 feet tall.
Interesting.
So you end up getting a bunch of nuances that can mess with your measurements and really like exaggerate things one direction or another.
Yeah.
And that is ultimately what this whole thing tries to figure out. There's an 86-page document going through everything about how to measure a tree's height, how to measure a tree's circumference, how to measure it with different things and different techniques. Are you climbing the tree and dropping a tape down? From what location do you drop it down? What if the tree is bent over and it has a really intense lean? Do you measure the stem and how long that stem is, or do you measure straight up to straight down? They have this all codified. They know they've decided on a scheme for everything.
What I like to imagine is that if you're measuring trees and you're like, oh, this one's tricky.
Yeah.
We got to call in our rep and a representative comes out in like a uniform.
Yeah. Like a little American Forest insignia. Yeah. You know, you can't get within 6 feet of them.
And he's like the wolf from Pulp Fiction.
This also comes up a lot in arboriculture, where if you are measuring something that is important for some rule in Portland, a big threshold is 12 inches and 20 inches. So if you're measuring it and the tree is so close to being 20 inches, if you measure it perfectly at 4.5 feet on flat ground, pretty defensible. If you measure it and you move it up a quarter of an inch and it becomes, say, 19.5 inches, mm-hmm. or you move it down a quarter of an inch and then all of a sudden it's 20.5 inches, which one is exactly that? What if it's on a slope? Where are you measuring it from? And it becomes really complicated, and a lot of times it can be the between 12 and 20 inches in the city of Portland, you can essentially remove a tree. At 20 inches, in certain instances, the city can say, no, you just can't remove that tree. In other instances, you would have to pay inch for inch to remove that tree at 20 inches. So it becomes all of a sudden something where everyone has like a monetary sort of stake in it being one way or the other.
I have a question, and I don't want it to sound insensitive, and I am not looking to ruffle any feathers, so if your feathers get ruffled, I'm sorry.
Yeah, yeah. Turn off
if you were
radio.
Hurt by my statement, I apologize. That's not what I'm saying. Why does any of this matter? Why are they doing this?
For like American forests?
Yeah.
It's a good question.
I'm like this specifically. I think American Forest has a great mission statement and I approve of all of those acts.
Uh-huh.
But this specific champion tree thing, it seems like the kind of thing that forestry people wouldn't like.
Oh, you mean like coming up with all these specificities and things?
Quite specifically, giving points to trees.
Oh, I see.
Much in the way that we do on Completely Arbitrary.
Yeah, so this sounds like, as you noted earlier, this is the organization, this is the OG, lowercase, completely arbitrary, lowercase arbitrary. Yeah.
These seem like the kind of people who would email us and say, I don't know why you guys have a point system, it degrades the meaning of the, you know.
Yeah,
so
I see.
Why are they... Why do this?
So that's actually a really fun question.
For the sake of data?
I don't think so. Okay. I read through their stuff a little bit. And again, you guys did everyone. We have their website linked on our website. But they essentially, like 100 years ago, wanted to generate some enthusiasm for the public to basically go out and inject yourself into nature. Go find these trees. Like, hey... No one knows what the biggest tree of this species is. No one knows what the biggest one in the United States is. No one knows which state has the biggest one. I think at the very beginning, we talked about Douglas fir, and we joked a little bit about this this rivalry that happened between Oregon and Washington, where they essentially, one Oregon, you know, tree, everyone's like, this is the tallest, biggest tree. Then all of a sudden, Oregon had the cup. We had the biggest one. Then Washington's like, no, we found the biggest tree. So there's a little bit of this, like, local pride, I think, that comes with it. So they kind of tapped into that and said, who's got the biggest tree? And then us being Americans, everyone's like, well, we got the biggest tree. Hey. And kept going. So I know it's a little bit cringy when you listen to it, but what it has done is it's made everyone go out and actually look at their trees. You know what else it did, Alex? It showed how many trees we've lost because everyone's like, oh, there's a bunch of big trees everywhere. And then they go out and measure. They're like, oh, no, there's not a bunch of big trees everywhere. There's like one big tree on this really old farm or in this forest that was never cut or in this forest that was cut. What were they like before that? What was it like where now there's just a field? There must have been these big trees everywhere. You know what I mean?
Okay.
So it kind of gets you to open your eyes a little bit and say, wow, okay, so this is the biggest tree. There's only two of these in this entire state that are this size. Oh my God, what have we done? And you know, you kind of get the, once you get the data, it's fun and you know, some people approach it just like you're saying, like just let's go out and make it happen. Go find what is the biggest tree for the sake of having the data. And there are other people who want to go out and be like, see, this is all we have left.
It's a bit of an undercover boss situation.
Please describe what you mean.
Undercover Boss is a reality TV show.
Okay.
Where the CEO of a company goes and puts on a disguise.
Yeah.
And pretends that they're a brand new employee at like the lowest level to see how their company operates at that level.
Yeah. 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 I remember when Kylo Ren did that
on SNL.
So good.
Yes. So you are familiar with the premise.
Oh, yeah.
So the CEO often goes in thinking my company is well run. It's fantastic. Everything's great because they're the CEO and they have very little perspective on the bottom of the pyramid.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then they go work as a fry cook and they're like, oh, my God, the system is broken. We don't pay these people enough. It all sucks. Our healthcare service is bad.
Yeah. Getting their Maserati and never look back.
So that's in the show, they quote, you know, have an awakening sort of moment. Yeah, okay. So that's what they're trying to do here is to get people to go out and see how bad things have gotten.
All right, that's kind of true. Or if it's not, I don't want to say that is their like explicit mission. You obviously read that. But I'd be willing to bet that there's a lot of people who have essentially been like, as a byproduct, you kind of go out and you either experience it and just are happier experiencing it, or you go out and it shows you, wow, okay, there really is not that many. And what are there half the time are like a quarter dead or something like that.
I see.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, so you answered my question.
Okay, good. I'm glad to your satisfaction.
We'll see.
All right.
Wait for the cone score.
Yeah, we'll wait. Well, so I was looking through this because, as I noted to you earlier, that champion, tree, the gigantic Virginia tulip tree is like 139 feet tall, which is approximately 52 feet shorter than the tallest one. So it's like, well, wait, why is that the champion? You can go through this and find a bunch of examples where the tallest tree is nowhere near the champion. Even in the redwoods, the tallest redwood tree is like, I think several feet in diameter smaller than the biggest redwood tree, which would be the one that has the most volume, right?
Right, because there are three measurements in play here.
Exactly.
Okay.
So it's a really curious thing, and I could never figure it out because I've been involved, not involved, but I've read these things about champion trees. One book called Trees to Know in Oregon, which I think is now Trees to Know in Oregon and Washington, or maybe just the Pacific Northwest, put out through Oregon State University. They have this list, and you can go to the Oregon one, also are listed on our website, and it goes through and shows all these numbers for a bunch of different species, either native to Oregon or just growing in Oregon. And you're always just like, well, that's not the biggest one. That's not, well, I guess it is, but what is this point system? Like, is it fair? It's very arbitrary. Usually it's very high, but it doesn't, it's their best way to homogenize it. When you have a bunch of different trees that grow in different ways and do different things, you have this X current versus a D current growth pattern, and some get really wide but not very tall, some get really tall but not that wide. It's like, well, how do you compare those, you know? So it's the best they could do, I suppose.
Oh.
Well, we chose Golden Cones of Honor. So, I mean, I guess, you know, at least we put some thought into it.
Oh, Lord.
Capital letters.
You just made so many enemies. Casey's opinions do not represent the opinions of the podcast.
There's a disclaimer here. That's brilliant. Well, if anyone wants to get an idea of how this works, it is... There are so many very particular things in this 86-page. Like, there's...
86?
It's 86 pages. And I went down through the measuring tree height section. And, Alex, there are equations here that I don't even know how to figure out. Like, there's sine equations. This is just one. The computations are D3 equals 37.5. Cosine negative 10.5 equals 36.872. And then they do that for a bunch of other things, and then that's like how they figure out the size and like essentially intense trigonometry.
Wow!
To stand and measure a tree without actually climbing up it, it's pretty intense. And they say this is how you do it. Then they go through and say, well, here's some detriments to doing it this way, and like show if you have a tree that is bent over, but then has a big hoof on the side away from where it's bent, then it is, it looks like it's taller than it actually is, or shorter than it actually is. It's very complicated.
Casey, you know what's not complicated?
What?
A 0 to 10 scale.
Oh, Alex, of golden cones.
That's right, ones? Casey. It's time for a review.
That sounds great.
Of the tulip tree. Here's how it works. We're going to give some final thoughts on this tulip tree, this utility, and then give it a rating of 0 to 10 golden cones of honor. Casey, as our resident expert, we begin with you.
All right. I love, 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 love the tulip tree. It's one of my top favorite trees. I'll give you some reasons why.
Okay.
You know how the leaves fall in the wintertime?
Yeah, I'm familiar with the process.
Autumn time, yeah.
Mm-hmm. In the fall.
Yeah.
You hey, is that it. Why they call it fall?
I think so, yeah.
Holy shit.
Wow. I can't 100% confirm that, but I'm pretty sure.
It's canon.
Wow. So they the leaves that come from the tulip tree, they hit the ground and they decay almost instantly. And they're full of nitrogen. So when they hit the ground, they just become like bing. Everything eats them up really fast, all the decay and insects and things like that. So they're really good for habitat. You also noted that they come in as an early successional tree. They grow up really fast. They last for a long time. They're a utility tree. They also help build habitat really quickly and easily.
Hmm.
Funny thing, if you plant them here in Oregon or almost anywhere, they're great street trees except for one big downfall, which is they, for whatever reason, Alex, are just a buffet for aphids and scale insects and the like.
Okay.
You know what they do, right?
The aphids?
Yeah.
Well, yes, they urinate.
They do.
And all over the ground and cars and stuff.
You're exactly right.
The sticky, I mean, it's sugar.
It is. It is essentially sugar water. That. It's sugar water. They drink, they tap into the leaves or the plant itself, and they suck out the juices. The sap is essentially what it is.
Yeah.
That sap is mostly sugar, just like, you know, maple syrup. They will take the trace nutrients that they can get from it, and they have as much sugar and water as they could ever need, and then we call it honeydew. They flick it away. They let it drip away.
Yeah.
Now,
such a beautiful name for such a disgusting thing.
Yeah, right? And it's, you know, it's not bad. Ants love it, for sure. But I lived in a house, had a big, beautiful tulip poplar right in the back corner. You could sit and try to think how the thing would go. Every now and then you'd get some shade from it, but it really was, it was a big, gorgeous tree. You could see it from miles around. I was like, yeah, I'm going to go sit outside my backyard. I'm going to do this thing. Maybe I'll get on my computer, watch a soccer game, just hang out, read a book. Middle of August, bright, beautiful, sunny day, nothing else. And it was physically raining on me.
Oh my God.
I was like, wait a second. Is there a sprinkler? Someone, no water. There's not a cloud in the sky. It can't be raining right now. Oh my God. I had to move. It drove me so crazy.
That's grotesque.
I couldn't do it. And Alex, I have a big constitution for these kinds of things. Yeah. I don't mind being dirty. I don't mind insects raining their urine and feces on me. You heard it here first.
Wow.
You
know what Casey wants for Christmas?
I couldn't sit in my backyard. I didn't like it. I was like, we got to put something up. And he got over everything. Like, there's this little like film on top of all the stuff, all the leaves from everything underneath the tree, like in the little garden boxes and
nasty.
Everything. I had to say, like, usually whenever someone complains, you know, when I was working at the city at the time, they'd be like, well, you know, who cares? This tree, you know, it's a growing tree. And I'm like, listen, sap coming onto your car, I don't care. It's not an important issue. Just move your car, wash your car, just shut up, and just, you can't cut your tree down. I now have a place in my heart. I regret being so flippant.
Oh, wow.
That sucked. If it's on your car, I still don't really care. But if it's in your backyard or your front yard and you can't sit out there without having like something over the top of you so that you don't get completely decimated by actual rain in the middle of the summertime.
So you had to...
Oh my God.
Let me get this straight.
Okay.
you had to experience the thing that people were complaining about.
Yes.
In order to understand their complaints.
Yes.
So I guess you learned some empathy that day.
Yeah, I learned some hard things.
So you're not like a naturally empathic person, yes. I guess is what you're saying.
I am. I actually usually take the opposite. I usually assume that everyone is just lazy and complaining, and they don't work hard at all.
You gotta pull yourself up by your bootstraps.
Yeah. You know what? If you just worked harder. No, you're right. You're right, Alex. I learned. I gained empathy there. I know. Sorry. You're not right that I'm a non-empathetic person.
I'm giving you shit.
Well, so in that regard.
Insect shit, which you love.
Thank you. I love it. He's literally rolling around in it right now. Oh, what a pig.
God.
So this one's really, really challenging for me because I love this tree. I think it's a great tree. I love the flower. I think it's excellent in every way except for that big, like very personal downfall.
You do seem troubled, like you don't know which way you're going to go.
Yeah, I should have given my review and like my numbers like 10 minutes ago, and I'm still talking, trying to calculate in my head.
Uh-huh.
Alex says as he looks at the clock. I'm going to give it a 6.2.
Oh, wow.
6.2. It feels low. It feels low. I think it should be higher. But you know what?
Okay.
It can grow and I love it. Okay, 6.7. I'm going to keep it there. I can only do one reversion.
Okay, give it a half a cone.
Yeah, I'm going to give it a half a cone.
6.7 golden cones of honor.
6.7 because elsewhere in the world, it's a spectacular tree.
Okay.
What do you think?
I have no personal attachment or unattachment to the tulip poplar.
I think this is going to make you good. I think this is going to, you're going to have a much more dialed and measured review here.
I have my number and very little explanation.
Ooh, okay.
It's 8.0.
8.0, right there.
8 golden cones of honor.
Okay.
I like this tree. I think it's unique. It's very old. I love ancient trees.
It is ancient.
It's got sort of like, it's got a kind of a double whammy. It's got a unique flower and a unique leaf. I love uniqueness in trees. Mm. I don't like a tree that just looks like every other tree.
Yeah.
Come on, stand out, impress me.
Yeah.
That's what you're here for.
That's what you're here for. What else are you growing for?
Yeah. I don't have much more to say. 8.0 golden cones of honor for the tulip poplar. That was our review of the tulip tree. I forget the Latin name.
Liriodendron tulipifera.
Did we ever say that this episode?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I said it a few times, I think.
Okay. Casey, it's time for a game.
What?
Wow, Casey's jaw dropped in a fashion. I challenge you to a duel.
Wow. Alex, I accept your challenge. However, my hands are very soft.
Hold on. Let me get my iron gauntlet that I can slap you in the face
okay,
with.
Please do. I will take off my silken glove.
However, Casey, just like other royalty, you and I cannot fight ourselves.
I don't want to.
Fortunately, we have the option to choose a champion tree.
Okay. All right. I like this. I appreciate the idea of we would fight to the death, but under no circumstances do I want to die nor kill you.
No.
So
that would mess up the bloodlines.
Yeah, exactly. So we'll hire somebody else.
It would throw the realm into chaos.
It would. We can't have that happen.
Casey, we're going to choose. You and I.
Okay.
Are going to choose a champion tree.
Okay.
From the American Forest lists of champion trees.
Wow.
However, this battle will take place 1 week from today.
What?
If you are listening to this on the Thursday of its release, you, the listener, the fungal associate, have 1 week to send us in an email, arbitrarypod@gmail.com, your choice for champion tree.
And why?
And why?
Why will it be the capital C champion of the champions? Also capital C.
We're talking physical strength, emotional strength.
Stamina.
Stamina. Agility.
I think we should also have a beauty contest along with it.
Okay.
Yeah. So it's we know you're strong. We know you can lift up a lot of leaves, but
are you stunning?
Do you have the dexterity to draw a beautiful portrait?
Wow.
Just saying.
Like a wisdom check.
Yeah, exactly. You can have like a big, strong, tough tree, but if it's not beautiful, who cares? Am I right?
So Here's how it works, Casey. We're kind of coming up with this on the fly. Let's just say it.
Yeah, we had
this idea, but we need to workshop the idea a little bit more. That's why it sounds so awkward and stilted. So we're basically gonna have a tournament of champions.
Exactly.
So you, the listener, are gonna send us your picks for your favorite tree.
Yep.
Casey and I are gonna collect all of the submissions. We will then go through a list and select a bracket of 8 versus 8.
Exactly.
Over the next couple of weeks, we will have a few matchups.
I'll tell you all about them.
And we will decide who wins between those matchups and progresses to the next bracket.
Exactly.
At the end, it will be 1 versus 1 in a tournament of champions trees. And we will choose the ultimate champion tree.
I think this is perfect.
And so what we're looking for from you is a species or a specific tree, a specimen.
Exactly, which also would be a species, but you can be that, precise.
Yes, however granular you want to get.
Yep, and then provide us some amount of rationale. We don't want paragraphs.
No.
Bullet points, maybe.
Tweet version.
Yeah. If you go more than a tweet, we will actually just delete 241 word and on, and then just read to there.
Hey guys, I'm a big fan of the pot.
Why did you waste your words? And then send it to us. Give us a couple reasons as to why you think that champion tree will beat all the other champion trees.
Yes.
And then again, go to our link in our website. It is listed as official register of champion trees. Go through there, find one, send it, tell us why.
Peruse the list, send it to arbitrarypod@gmail.com, arbitrarypod@gmail.com. And in the subject line, it would be extremely helpful. How about we'll say all submissions must include the subject line, Tournament of Champion Trees.
Yes.
How about that, Case?
Easy.
Wow.
Easy.
We just basically had a brainstorming session live on the podcast.
You're welcome, everyone. Honestly, this is what people want. Do it live, just like that.
And I'm very excited to see. And I want to say this, too. We're not linking your name as the listener with the tree. You are hereby nominating one of these trees.
Yes, correct.
So it's not like you and another fungal associate are going head to head in the very end.
Yes, it's
it is
tree.
Two trees that
yes.
are being nominated.
Yeah, exactly. And then if you want, let us know if you want us to say, hey, we've had this person, some of these people. Because if it's just one person says a tree, we might shout you out.
Yeah.
If it's a million people, we might shout out a few of you.
Yeah, sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah. With that, let the tournament begin! See, here's where brainstorming beforehand comes in handy, because this started as a duel.
Yeah, exactly.
And now it's a tournament.
And now it's a tournament. Honestly, that's the way all good champion things should be, you know?
Yeah.
Like, someone was like, wait a second, what if that duel was, like, 10 times
right.
those duels? That'd be sick.
Why don't we do this, but 31 more times?
Yeah, exactly. And then everyone's like, well, actually, that sounds like a really good idea.
Yeah.
I'm so excited for this, Alex.
I am too, Casey.
I love making brackets and tournaments.
It's going to be a lot of fun. The Tournament of Champion Trees 2022 begins now. Casey, it's time for our completely arbitrary Q&A. This week, our question is from Alexa Glock. Hi, Casey and Alex, says Alexa.
Hi, Alexa.
Hi, Alexa. I've got a question about hickories. Mm-hmm. Here in my backyard in Virginia, I've got a bunch of what I think are pignut hickories.
Ah, the old pignut.
Growing all together along a slope. Right now, just one of these trees has catkins. Why don't the others? As a side note, the tree that has catkins now also had a ton of nuts in past years, but I honestly can't remember if the others had nuts too. What gives? Thank you, Alexa.
That is a very curious question.
So only one of these hickories growing on Alexa's slope is growing catkins.
Growing the catkins.
That's the new reality show. It's like Keeping Up with the Kardashians, growing the catkins.
Growing the catkins. Welcome.
Casey, what do you think? What would cause one tree to perform its yearly thing and not the others?
That is very interesting.
Have I stumped you, Casey?
You might have, because I could come up with a couple reasons, none of which would maybe be the reason.
Let's brainstorm as we just did with our game.
Exactly. So here's the big thing. So my first question was like, well, are they monoecious or dioecious? Monoecious, of course, meaning one house, which means all the flowers, male and female, are on one tree.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's dioecious, which means there are two trees. One has the male parts, the other has the female parts.
And what did you find?
It is a monoecious tree. So hickories are all monoecious. However, the big question is, why then would only one tree of all of them be growing in making flowers while the others don't? I wonder though if they're all the same. That's the next thing. Some trees basically don't get to sexual maturity until they're of an age.
So this might be the eldest of these trees.
Yeah, exactly. This one might be the post-pubescent tree.
Okay.
All the rest are like, I'm not making trees right now, or I'm not making any sex parts.
Call Suzanne Simard. We found the mother tree.
Yeah, we did. We literally found it, right?
Wow.
So in that case, it's very common for trees to essentially need to grow and put all their efforts towards life first. They're like, okay, before I can reproduce, I need to build up enough reserves. I need to get tall enough to compete. And I also need to get myself sturdy enough that I'm not just going to break over.
Okay.
So they have to kind of get those things over. Once they have mastered that, they've built up enough things, it takes X amount of years. Then once they're like 20 years old, then they will start producing flowers. I'm making up the number there. So that could be the biggest reason why. It might be that it's the biggest tree, so it just has the most access to light and other resources. Otherwise, it could be genetic, where maybe this tree is just, it's going at it really hard, really fast. All the rest are kind of like, man, I'll take my time. I'll get there sometime.
This could be a champion tree.
Yeah, this could be a champion tree. Have they measured it? That's what we need.
Follow up, Alexa.
Yeah, please send us an email. Champion hickory tree question.
Well, there you have it. Okay, yeah. So it could be a couple different things.
This could be a couple different things, and I'm not 100% sure. But here's another quick thing. It looks like they only start to bear seeds about 30 years old. So it could be that they just need that much time. All the rest aren't quite of an age.
I'm going to make a ruling on this.
Okay.
I like this theory that this is just the oldest of the lot, and it is at maturity. There you have it. You got some stuff to work with, Alexa.
Yeah, that's a hard one.
If you have a question about trees, email us at arbitrarypod@gmail.com. That's ArbitraryArray. And please remember to send in your nominations for the Tournament of Champion Trees. We will start that next episode.
That's what I'm talking about.
So get those submissions in. Now, should we give people a longer amount of time?
Yeah,
Casey?
Here's what I think we should do.
Okay.
You send in your submissions, and we will announce another bit of it. We'll say, okay, here's what we got so far, and tell everyone what the stakes are. Then the week following, that's when everything's really gonna go down.
Okay. Well, I will say a couple of things.
Yeah.
We should have done this in March for Mulch Madness.
Obviously.
And it might be good to give people, like, you know, I'll say this. We'll keep you up to date on the Instagram.
Yeah.
Because we can update that every day, but we only put out an episode once a week.
Exactly. Yeah. So we'll make an announcement.
Yeah. So keep an eye on the Instagram for all this bullshit. Casey.
Oh, man. Alex, that could be a slogan for our entire podcast, just to be clear.
You know, we have fun.
What an odyssey we've been on today.
Yes, Casey, I'm happy to have talked about this tree. It's you know, it got sort of a middling score from you, but I could tell you were pulled both ways.
Yeah, I'm very torn. I'm very torn.
And sometimes you just gotta play the cones as they land.
Yeah, sometimes you just gotta do it. You just gotta see it. You gotta call it as you see it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh well.
And with that, I didn't mean to end it on a somber note. So let's not. Thank you very much for listening to this episode of Completely Arbitrary. We'll see you next time. Bye.
Yahoo! Completely Arbitrary is produced by Alex Croson and Casey Clapp.
Our artwork is by Jillian Barthold, and our music is by Aves and the Mini Vandals.
And you can support the podcast at patreon.com/arbitrarypod.
And find additional readings at completelyarbitrary.com. Thanks for listening.